Okay, I come into this this talk with a little bit of trepidation. I prefer to give Torah content. That's why I went into this, and that's the excitement of kind of getting up and speaking in front of a group of people. But in thinking about a topic for this particular forum, I felt that it would be right to go in a little bit of a different route. And so the topic is From Dating to Marriage, a Parent's Guide to a Child's Successful Journey. I kind of wanted to explore perhaps where I could lend insight as a Torah educator, an OUJ licensed Torah educator on a college campus, working with children of, or rather with students of your children's ages, people who are looking to date and to get married. And instead of speaking extensively about sources, which I'm sure you got a lot of today, I got to sit in some of the other sessions, they were amazing, and to really get that piece of it. The goal here is to cull from my own experience working with college students who are in this phase of life and give the best advice that I can give, but I want to couch it as this is the best advice that I have based on the experience that I have with dozens of students, if not more than that, who have been in the, so to speak, in the Parsha, who are looking to date or are looking to get married. Lots of conversations with students, lots of conversations with parents. Don't tell the students that I do talk to the parents also. They tend to call me on the side. So between all of those things, I felt that this was the way to go. Though again, there's a sense of trepidation because I can't back it up with a source. I always prefer to come from that place of Torah. And in that sense, feel free to disagree. Feel free to take notes. If you disagree, disagree respectfully, but go for it. And if you have any comments or suggestions, feel free to do so. That being said, I am speaking from 4 years of experience working with a lot of these kids who are very honest and open through a lot of the time that we're there. So if some of this information or advice puts you a little bit at unease, process it first. Think about it. And if you agree, if you conclude that you disagree with me, that's great, that's fine. But it's a very challenging, it's an emotionally charged time of life. So take what I have to offer with as open a mind as you can, and feel free to discard it later. But if you don't take it in the first place, then that opportunity won't be there. So let's jump in. So the goals for this discussion on mind are twofold. One is to help you guide your child, because they will likely and hopefully be turning to you for guidance of some sort. And the second thing is to avoid potential mistakes that could harm your relationship with your child over the course of this process, that could harm his or her relationship with you, with their the person that they're dating or engaged to, and also could even end that relationship if that relationship was not supposed to be ended. Also would like to say as I go into this, I do recognize some faces in the room. I'm sure that people who are listening to this online will also, both students and parents, will be listening in thinking, oh wow, they're talking about me. I took a lot of care that all of the things that are being said here are not isolated specific instances, but things that have been recurring things over time. So if you think it's about you, it's not. Just saying that for the recorder, for the world, for the people in the room, just so you know. Okay, start from the beginning. Am I ready to start dating? That's usually, hopefully, where a child starts when they start dating. Sometimes they accidentally fall into dating. Sometimes they just happen to meet somebody. Sometimes they all their friends are going forward and they're dating, so that's why they start dating. But hopefully, I found most students that I work with, they do ask themselves the question to whatever extent. Am I ready to start dating? And it's usually a question that's fraught with anxiety. So how does a person know when they're ready to start dating? I found that there are really two basic questions that I explore with a student when they're asking themselves this question. The first thing, and this is the only pasuk, the only Torah source that I'm going to quote, but I think it's a really important one, and I think it's the most fundamental one going into this, is from Parshat Bereshit. How did Adam know that it was time to date Chava? And note that he didn't have any other choices. And yet, the Torah goes out of its way to clarify that. It says, Al-kein ya'azov ish et aviv ve'et imo, v'davak b'ishto v'yil basar echad. Therefore, at that time, a man, this speaking specifically to men, but it applies on both sides, a man is ready to leave his mother and his father, I would say in parentheses, household, and go and connect with his wife, and the two of them shall become one flesh. And I talk to the students and think to them, are you ready to leave your parents' household behind? And for some students, that's the end of the conversation. That frightens them tremendously. They're not ready to leave the comfort of their parents' home. They're not ready to leave the comfort of their family and start their own family. They want to date because everybody else is dating, but I'm not ready for a financial independence. I'm not ready to find my own house. I'm not ready yet. I just want to be married. And they don't recognize that the two have to go hand in hand. Usually a student, when I say that, I say, well, think and wait and come back to you when you feel that sense like it's just time. You're just ready to go. You need to move on. That's the first question that you need to ask yourself, and that's mandated by the Torah in that sense, I think. So the first question is, are you ready to leave your parents' household? And for a lot of students, I found that that can even be a reason to stop the conversation before it even starts. That's in the sense of the me'ayin bata. In terms of the la'ana ta'olech, what I say to a student is, okay, fine, you say you're ready to leave what's behind you, but where are you going? And what I would say is that for a student who's thinking about dating, I say, are you ready? It's a frightening question to be asked for a lot of these students. Are you ready to be married 1 year from today? Because the assumption is if you're going into dating, you're hopefully going to get married. That's usually the presumption, and when that's not the case, it's a whole separate conversation. But assumably, if you're going to start dating and get married, you hope that the first person that you're going to date is going to be the one. You don't go in hoping that you should start now because person number 15 or 25 or 30 is going to be the right one. So you're going to assume that the first person that you're going to get set up with, or the first person that you're going to meet, or the first person you're going to date with, that person's going to be the one. In which case, if you take the general arc for the majority of our students, and we'll discuss this as we go forward because I don't think it's the healthiest arc, around 6 months dating, around 6 months engaged, you've got a wedding in a year. Can you see yourself married 1 year from today? That will take like half of who's left taking a step back and being like, you know what, I'm not sure. I wanted to start dating, but I don't know if I'm ready for it again. They didn't internalize what it means, am I ready for marriage? Now, those are things that I explore with the students who come to me. But again, they're going to be coming to you and you're going to be talking to them. Those are questions that you want to, not in a judgmental way, in a loving and caring and open way, bring up and discuss with your child. Because if they're not ready to leave your home, you are going to run into problems and they're going to run into problems. And for sure, your daughter-in-law and son-in-law are going to definitely run into problems. Because they're not ready to split from you. Part number two is, if they're not ready to be married, I mean, that's really the question. It's asking you, not are you ready to date, are you ready to be married? If you're ready to be married, then you can start dating. So those are the two questions that I discuss with students at the get-go, and I find that that sort of separates out people who are ready for dating from the people who are not ready for dating. Before we switch gears, still under this topic, any questions, thoughts, comments, reflections so far? Okay, so let's up the ante a little bit. The other thing that I think that you all as parents should be talking about with your kids at this juncture is I think it's important to have a conversation about finances. That's something that students, that your children, a lot of this conversation is going to be about expectations. And your children are going to have certain expectations. And they may be unrealistic. They may be coming from a place of entitlement. They may be coming simply from a place of the fact that they only know a few people who got married and they know what the situation was between those people and their parents. And they're going to have certain assumptions, certain expectations. And those assumptions and expectations could critically impact whether or not they are ready to start out on a life on their own. And in a way, again, the earlier you do it, the better. But in a way that's not judgmental, that's not harsh. Sit down and say, well, let's talk about what's the financial plan going forward. Some parents are going to take a harsh stance. Listen, you get married, you heard the pasuk that we just quoted, you're gone, you're out. That's it, it's over. You are cut off. The minute you leave my house, if you're saying you're ready to leave my house, then I'm not giving you anything. On the opposite extreme, there are families, there are parents who will say, I'll support you as long as you want. Baruch Hashem, I have the money. I love you, I care about you, and I'll take care of you until you're 100. It doesn't matter to me. Now, we can argue the merits of either side, but this is not about merits. The issue is expectations and everything in between. And think really critically before you sit down with your child. Think about what they're thinking about. Think about what you really want for them or what you're comfortable supporting them with. Is the answer with, you know what, I was going to pay for your college education anyway, whether you're married or not, I'm going to keep paying for college. Were you planning to pay through graduate school? Well, whether you're married or not, I'm still going to pay for graduate school. Were you planning to pay for an apartment for them or for a dorm for them while they were in college or graduate school? Well, okay, if it's the same money, I'm telling you that since I want you to get your degree, that I've invested in, I have put that money aside for you, that's my choice, and I'm going to cover your college degree, I'm going to cover your graduate degree, and I'm going to cover either the entire apartment, or if it's going to be more expensive, however much I would have put into a dorm, I'm willing to put that into your merit apartment. Because I'm still supporting you through this process that I believe in for you. And how much does it go past that? If you're married, are you planning to support them financially and write them a check every month or not? Are you going to support them by giving them certain things or not? But know for yourself what it is that you are going to do for them, and in a very loving way, communicate to them that when you're thinking about whether or not you're ready to date and whether or not you're ready to take a step out of this house, what is going to be that differentiation? And here's what I'm offering you, and you figure out if you're ready to date or not. You figure out if you're up to that place or not. That's up to you. And this is how much I'm willing to be a part of that once you step away. If you do it lovingly and clearly from the beginning, it will take away a lot of the stress later on because the expectations that are there will clarify themselves. You won't walk in with negative expectations when they're like, oh, okay, so I'm going to get married, and like things will be like they always were, and you're like, you're getting married. Of course they're not. Am I getting your wedding money? When that's the response, that conversation ended before it started. So to clarify those financial expectations is a really, really important piece. The last piece that I'll add to that is as follows, and this is thinking really ahead, but that's just the way I work, and I think it's a helpful way to work with students, especially who sometimes can be short-sighted, and, by the way, for parents who it sometimes can be short-sighted, is to think about how much you anticipate supporting your child when your child has a child. Because that can also make a very big impact on how ready they think they are. They're just running in and starting to date. They're not thinking that far ahead. But, you know, you walk into Yeshiva University, you can see both ends of the extreme in terms of what the opinions are about the Yeshiva even there. It's an easy example because they have lots of Rosh Yeshiva and they all disagree, right? So you have one, you can have a Rosh Yeshiva who says, you can go on birth control, but if you go on birth control, don't come to me when you have infertility problems, and that's how they'll say it, very harshly and very publicly. It's not hard to find out who says it like that. Nor is it hard to find out the person who says, in this day and age that we live in, the most important thing is to get married. And every marriage in this day and age is not as solid as it used to be. And I want you to be on birth control at least for 6 months to start out, and let's renegotiate in 6 months and we'll see whether you think you're ready or not. Those are the two extremes and everything in between. But you have to let them know. You don't have to. You should let them know. Say, listen, this is also what I'm giving you, but just know that if you end up having a child right after you get married, the financial support that I'm going to be providing with you is not going to change. Or, don't worry also, if you're going to have a child, we'll renegotiate and I'll help you out because I want to make sure that you have grandchildren and I want you to start your life and I want you to start your family now. There's no judgments there. Both of those are totally legitimate routes. But if they find out, based on their incorrect expectations, that you are going to increase their support when they have children, and they find out, which they didn't know, that their post-egg is not going to work with them on birth control, and they're already engaged, now in the midst of fighting about the wedding, you're also fighting about whether or not you're having grandkids. And that's not good. So while it seems extreme to talk about all these things from the get-go, it's really not. It's really laying the groundwork for a real foundation for how to progress step after step, and for that person to know, that your child to know, am I ready for this responsibility with this arc that I'm creating myself or not? And you're teaching them about how to really think ahead about what you're ready for or not. And you're asking them to question their values. Do I need to know that I have financial security to have children? Or do I assume that everything will be taken care of and I'll work with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me? Or do I know that it doesn't matter, my parents are going to take care of me, so it's all good and they just want grandkids and I want to have kids, so we're all good to go. Without judgments, it allows one to make those informed decisions. Yeah, I saw that one having more questions than the previous 2 points. Yeah.
Not that I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But just seeing what I've seen, do you sometimes tell girls to start dating even though they're not necessarily ready? Because if they started at 24, then the pickings are slim and they don't get the dates that they would have gotten when they were 21. Do you direct boys and girls differently because of
the shit up situation?
Yeah, I feel like when girls, maybe it was just when I was saying, but when girls hit even close to 23, it's like, she's not married yet, what to do? They're not, the boys who are even 23 want to get set up, the girls who are 21. It really is much harder for a girl as she gets older.
True, but if she is not ready, then I don't think it's going to make the difference. I think that instead of putting her energies and efforts into navigating a shidduch scene that she is not prepared for because she's not ready to get married, and by the way, wasting a lot of guys' time, then on the flip side, she should be spending that mental energy and that actual time working on herself to get to the place where she's ready to start dating from a place of strength. And I would sit and work with her on that, or have my wife work with her on that. We work as, you know, we're hired as an educator couple, we're hired as a team, to figure out why are you not ready yet, and what are the impediments, and is this something that you want, and how do we get there? But I think it should come from a place of strength, because that will get her married, not just dating, in my humble opinion. Okay. I am ready to date. What am I looking for? Right? That's the next question, right? They get over that hurdle, they're ready to go, and I'm like, they're like, okay, I want to get set up, and you're like, with who? They're like, I don't know. I don't know. Do I make a list? So unfortunately, the answer oftentimes is yes, and the answer is no. Making a list is not the way to go. I would have loved to hear more back and forth, but I don't want to go over time, and you have an incredible Rosh Yeshiva who's going to be speaking after I am, and I certainly don't want to take you away from that. So I will, you know, in your mind, I'm sure you have all thought of things that you think your child should be thinking about when they are dating, and that they must have in their spouse when they find that perfect person. I would suggest that list is probably too long. I have 2.5 things on the list for every student. The things that you're likely thinking of, which is not fair because I didn't give you an opportunity to speak, I apologize, but the things that you're likely thinking of, based on my experience, are a list of things that fall into a category that I call shared values. There are 2.5 things. In my mind, that's the half. It's not even the top two. And I'll explain why in a moment. But in the topic of shared values, here's where it comes into a discussion of how do you date? Now, there are obviously an endless number of ways that one could date. One can simply go and hang out and meet people in a person's apartment at a Shabbos meal. One can go to an intentional social situation that puts people together who are all single. Never been totally clear on why that's a comfortable situation, but fine, people like to go to these kind of gatherings where everybody's single and everybody's looking at each other. I would find that super tense for me. I don't know. I'd find that a little bit, like, difficult. Then you have having your friends set you up, which is kind of like shit updating light. Then you have, well, people you know who are married, who are experienced, those people have set you up. Then you've got shadchanim. Some of them who are paid, some of them who are not paid. Getting to shadach resumes, because work resumes weren't enough, right? If you put shadach resumes, and on until you get to even, you know, and it still exists to this day, it's not in the communities that we're talking about, you have arranged marriages. You get to meet once or twice, and then I'll see you under the chuppah. But these are all legitimate forms of trying to date. What I recommend to students, again, you can agree or disagree, and it also varies by, this one really varies by student and where they're at religiously and where they're at socially and what they're comfortable with. I recommend a blended model, which is basically steal the best from all of them. If the shidduch system is trying to take advantage of you, turn it on its head and take advantage of it. Use it to your advantage, and then hopefully that will help set you on a better course. How so? When a person sits down for that first date, we want to focus on the other two things that we haven't named yet. The one thing that I would prefer that a student not have to endlessly obsess over is the shared values question. So to me, the goal of doing research, and not necessarily going through professionals who kind of necessarily are paying them, not necessarily going through shidduch resumes and all this stuff, but at least by getting set up by friends, by family members, by parents, however it is to find out, are we generally somewhat on the same page? Because if we're totally not on the same page, then we're wasting each other's time. But are we generally on the same page? Are we generally in the same religious sphere or arena? Are we generally have the same life goals? And even there, pick a couple of things that really get to the heart of it. You know, think about what are the things that you want to weed out. For example, when I was dating, I knew that I wanted to go into chinuch, nebuch. I knew I wanted to go into chinuch, right? So I remember even talking to married friends, these types of people who I was doing this system with, who were setting me up. And I would say, you know, does she know that I want to go into chinuch? And there were quite a few times the answer was, no, I didn't say anything. And I was like, why? So someone would go, well, you know, people in chinuch don't make a lot of money, and she'll probably say no to dating you, and I think you guys would be great together. She'd probably say no if she knows that you're going to go into chinuch. And I'm thinking in my head, that's insane. Why are you setting me up with somebody where inevitably I will never meet their financial expectations? You are actually setting me up for Shalom Bayis problems. She doesn't want to marry, she wants to marry somebody who can take care of her needs where she's at. So why are you trying to cover that up? If for her that's a deal breaker, if her focus is on, in my mind, again, this is my personal perspective, what I was looking for, on that materialistic piece of it, and that wasn't my focus when I was dating, then we don't have that shared value of education, of making things work, of not living as extravagantly as somebody working in a different field might be able to provide for. But the shared value piece is something where you want, in my mind, you want to investigate that beforehand, but not as deeply as most people do. You don't need to know how many times a week that person does chesed. You don't need to know which minyan the person davens at. You don't need to know what they're doing on every moment of their free time. You don't need to Facebook stalk them. You just need to know, are we generally on the same page? And I'll explain why that is, because here are the two things that I think are the only two things that really matter when going and actually on the date itself, assuming that we've clarified that we have general shared values before we're sitting down. The first one, first and foremost, physical attraction. There must be physical attraction. It's something that we see more in the religious and shidduch dating world. I found this girl, she's so great, she's amazing, I found this guy, he's wonderful, he's everything I hoped for. So what's the problem? Why are we talking? Why is this not going forward? I'm just totally, totally not attracted to him. I'm just totally, I'm just not attracted to her. She's just, I can't see it. And it's like, then that needs to end. That's an incredibly important fundamental of marriage. And what I tell them is, when they get upset, but everything else is perfect. We've been dating for 3 months and everything is perfect. I just have no one have any physical contact with her ever. That you don't have a marriage. And what I say to them is, more importantly, this is an important moment for you. Because you need to accept the fact that, yes, everything looks right. But this is a HaKadosh Baruch Hu who has designed you, telling you he knew you would think that this is right, and he is telling you that this is wrong. Now, on the flip side, that takes a couple of dates. If a person goes on one date and says, no, I wasn't into her, or no, I wasn't into him, I say, well, why? And if the answer is, I wasn't totally attracted to the person, I say, okay, well, a second. First of all, always go on two, because it's disrespectful to the person, but I'm a chavero, you don't want them to feel bad. Always go on a second date. Second of all, when you get to know somebody, they look different over time. Sometimes, that's why when people are in social situations, you can have a friend, be friends with somebody for 3 years, 4 years, then suddenly, wow, something explodes, and suddenly start dating, and they get married, and it's this whole great story. Well, what happened? Why wasn't this person pining after this other person for the last 4 years? Because you see something new in a person, you see something deeper in a person, and you can see them in a totally different way. And so physical attraction is something that can shift slightly over the first few dates. But after that, if there is no physical attraction, it needs to end. Second thing, point number two, one is physical attraction. Number two is mutual respect. That's the thing that you really want to dig for. Is there mutual respect? Because this comes back to the shared values piece. You know, let's say you find somebody. Let's say your child finds somebody who is exactly where they are, other than the fact that they probably don't love themselves as much as they should and probably therefore won't like the other person because nobody likes an exact vision of themselves. But let's say they find the exact copy. Everything's in the same place. That's not, to me, what's important, because for those of you in the room who are married or those of you in the room who experience parents, as life goes on, things diverge. And you don't always share the exact same values. And you don't always want to send your kids to the exact same school. And she may not want to keep covering her hair. And you may decide that you don't want to go to mincha because it's too stressful with your job and you're not in the yechidus. And suddenly the religious values that were perfectly in place, they're not in place anymore. Because life happens. Which is why to me much more important than if you're in the exact same place in terms of shared values, is there mutual respect? Because if there's mutual respect, then everything else doesn't matter. Everything else is obviously with an asterisk, meaning if the person isn't Jewish, if the person isn't Shomer Shabbos, we're not talking about to the extremes. We're talking about to the nitty-gritty that I'm dating people get obsessed over. It doesn't matter. Because if he or she knows that this person differs from them on a certain level, but they love that about them, and they respect me. See, I don't understand that. I don't agree with that. But it's so amazing that she sees the world this way. It's so amazing that he relates to the world this way. And I love him for that, or I love her for that, or I'm really excited to... I appreciate that other person's perspective. Then you know that they have a mutual respect for each other, and that when they do diverge, they'll be able to have a healthy marriage. Because they will inevitably diverge on certain issues. Mutual respect is so key. The thing to me where I always stop a student and we change the conversation when I investigate this piece, if they come to talk to me while they're dating. So I'll be talking to them and I'll say, like, you know, and like, is there anything like you don't see eye to eye? Like this, like, oh yeah, well, we don't agree on this, but like, I know, like, after a few months and when we're married, like, I'm convinced that this person will change. I'm sure that we'll figure this. Like, I'm sure that they'll come around on this point. That's not mutual respect. That's you hoping to marry an idealized person of a person that doesn't exist. And I say to the person, if you, especially if they come to me and say, like, I everything is great, but X. My question is, well, can you respect X or can you not live with X? And if they say, no, I can't, but I know it'll change, then we have a serious conversation about mutual respect. Because if they can't respect the other person for who he or she is, then even if they get through this, they will run into problems later. So I would say, again, the two most important things, perhaps the only two important things, physical attraction and mutual respect, which allows for a dynamic that will have a positive marriage, with the presumption that there is a basic level of shared values. With no obsession about insignificant details, that is what most of the shidduch world spends its time on. Pause there for a second. That was a lot of information. Any thoughts, comments, reflections? Anybody ready to come and tackle me up here? It's fine. It's okay if you do. No. Okay, either you all totally disagree with me or being incredibly respectful, which I appreciate, and you're waiting for this to end, or we're all learning something together. I would watch you preparing this. Okay. If you're setting up your child, there are two things to be honest about. One is, be honest about who your child is. We touched on this before, so we're not going to harp on it. Be honest about who your child is. The goal is not to get your child a date. That's sad. The goal is to get your child the right date, the right person, the person who could be their soulmate. And so giving an image of your child that is not congruent with who they are is damaging to him or her and the person that you've now unintentionally wasted their time on the opposite side of the table with them as well. Be honest. Now, this gets a little bit tricky because there's a presumption in dating that, well, when you're talking about a person, there's an assumption that everybody's lying, so you have to talk two steps ahead in order to outsmart them, so we know that if I say that she's this or he's that, then they'll take it two steps back. Azov. Sorry, I switched to Hebrew when I get, like, really upset. Let it go. Let it go. When I'm talking to people who call me about students, and I've never run into problems with this, usually, I would say 9 out of 10 times, the date always goes through. I say, listen, I just want to tell you from the get-go that, like, I am going to be 110% honest with you, so please don't adjust. I want to tell you who this person is because I want to make sure it's the right fit and give you real information with which to go on. And nobody has ever said to me, what's wrong with you? Nobody's ever then said to the person, oh, now we're not going to... Almost every time the date gets set up because they're coming to me just to clarify certain things. But if everybody's guessing everybody else, then you're going to... might come to wrong conclusions. So I say, yes, this is this person's strength. This is what they're focused on. This is where they're at. But if, as long as you clarify the conversation from the get-go, that this is how you are going to talk about your child or the person that you're trying to set up, I find it a much, honestly, it's just generally a healthier way to go. And it leaves off a lot of the guessing about how much to readjust after you've tried to portray a person based on what you think they're going to do with the information that you give them, and suddenly we're snowballing. The second thing is, and this is the hardest part, you also got to be honest with yourself about who your child is and is not. And that's really difficult. Because you might think that your child is much more active than he or she is. And you might think that your child is much more religious than he or she is. And you might think that your child is much more social than he or she is. And you might think that your child is the God's gift to humanity. And you might be right. But everybody in this room thinks that you're wrong because they think about their own child. So the question is, who is my child? And before getting on that phone call, really thinking not about what your hopes and dreams and aspirations are for what their home will look like and who your child is and who he or she will marry, but what's really going to be good for him or her? Where is he or she really at? Because I find that a lot of times students struggle where they're getting set up by their parents, where they're getting set up by friends or by family friends, and they're like, they just don't get it. I'm not that religious. They just don't get it. That's not who I am. And they're struggling because they can't date the person that they're hoping to date because everybody's setting them up with the ideal in their minds for them, but it doesn't match the reality of the person themselves. That's the biggest reflection I think that the parent needs to do in this stage is to really kind of settle on a genuine, real picture of who the child is or is not. Two quick notes, and then we'll move on to the next piece, or we'll call it depending on what's happening next. One is to look or not to look. There's this whole machloket back and forth. Do you look at a picture of the person beforehand or not? There are strong opinions on both sides. In my limited and humble opinion, my answer is you do not need to see a picture and you should not see a picture. There is no way to encapsulate a beautiful, wonderful, three-dimensional person in a two-dimensional image from one particular point in time that was probably edited on some sort of computer program to make it look different anyway. Because he doesn't look like Brad Pitt.
And contradictory to what you said about physical attraction.
No, excellent, thank you. So I would say it's not. The only way to know, I think that the only way for a person to know if they're really physically attracted to the person, like I talked about, is even after the first date you don't know, there needs to be context and personality and conversation and relationship. Do you find the person attractive, not their image attractive? And if you end up on the date and after two dates the person is totally not where you're at, so then it's okay to end it. But I've seen so many people turn down such wonderful people who they were really, really good for. Because while I'm talking to them on the phone about the person, I'll get an answer, I'll get a response. I love this is my favorite one. I got this a couple of times. Oh, Rabbi, you can stop right now. I went on my friend's Facebook account and I just looked up her profile and I see that she's not what I'm looking for. First of all, either get Facebook or don't, but who are you kidding? Right, but again, the whole thing there is my point is that there's this whole image thing that's totally messed up. So either get Facebook or don't get Facebook. But you're going, I'm actually telling you about her, and you've ignored all of the content just to look at the picture while we're talking? So I know that there are two sides to this argument, and feel free to take whichever one you want, but I would advocate for, see the person in context. They are a real, full, whole, three-dimensional person, and you never know who or what you're going to fall in love with. Yes?
What if a person's dating for a few years already, and he knows that he cannot deal with the girl who's broad, who's bigger than him, he's very slight, and he just can't deal with it, and he says, I can't waste my time anymore, it's just too frustrating.
Then that person has gone through the process of identifying that that's something which he is definitively not attracted to. He's dated, he's seen, can he come around, and he says, I'm not going to make a list of 15 physical attributes that I won't date. This category of people I know that I'm not attracted to, and out of respect, I don't want to waste her time. But that takes experience in dating.
But he needs to see the picture.
Or the person behind the scenes can say, you know,
he doesn't trust that.
Can't answer all the questions from the Shadow system. There are always exceptions to the rule, and if this is an exception to the rule, then an exception to the rule. There is a speaker speaking in three minutes. I definitely have some more points. This is the last round robin session. I'm going to break for 60 seconds. If anybody would like to go and move on to the next piece, they are welcome to. If anybody would like to stay and unofficially keep going, that's totally fine, but I want to respect the other speakers as well. So we'll pause for a minute, and anybody who would like to stay and keep going, we'll talk about what happens when you think that the person is the wrong person for your child after they've already gotten engaged, and how to get them through the actual process of engagement for those who want to stay.
So I guess.
Yeah, okay, great. All right, we're going to resume. We're going to pick up. Okay. Your child is about to get engaged, or they already are engaged, and it's the worst situation possible. They have picked the wrong person. You know this. You are sure of this. They have made the biggest mistake of their life, or they are about to make the biggest mistake of their life.
What criteria are you making that judgment on?
So that's the question that I want to ask. But parents who come to speak to me generally are 110% sure. And it's always fascinating to me that they are 110% sure.
Their life experiences?
Whatever the case would be. The point here isn't to judge parents, it's to deal with the reality and try to kind of steer us in hopefully a healthy direction. But my first question that I wrote down was, how do you know? it comes back to the idea of not thinking necessarily that you don't necessarily know everything about your child, and it really might be the right person. Think about the fact. Are you religiously exactly where you were when you got engaged? We have a few questions here. Did you change? Did you and your spouse change in the exact same way? You know, there are a lot of things that you, again, may want for your child. Your child also know what your child needs and what your child wants. And if he or she is attracted to this person, if he or she wants to marry this person, and if there is mutual respect from both sides, if that's all in place, open up to the fact that this might be the one. And tread very carefully when trying to steer your child's dating of another person and your child's potential engagement to another person. If you end up not getting anywhere with your child, you have alienated your son-in-law or your daughter-in-law. Because they know that you don't think that they're right for their child, and they may get engaged and married anyway. So tread very carefully how you navigate that, because that's damage that cannot be undone if the engagement goes through. If the engagement does not go through, if you are successful at enlightening your child to the mistakes that they have made, and they really don't agree with you, but they can't stomach the response, they can't stomach knowing that they've split off from you because of how vociferously you don't want them to marry this person, you may have destroyed your relationship with your child because you kept them from marrying the person that they wanted to marry. Now, that technically is up to them. That's their choice. But think very critically before determining that the person that your child just introduced you to is the wrong person. Yes?
I think the key element in that mm-hmm. is having the opportunity to really understand that person and know that the person that your child is very interested in. My question to you is, how do I get that opportunity? And wait, I should premise that with, in this shit-up world where there's about 10, maybe 15 dates that your child is going to go on.
If they're in the shidduch world, then it means that everything is moving a little bit faster. Right. So just up the timetable and say, hey, let's all go out to dinner together. Hey, let's all meet each other. Say, and you can even clarify for your son or your daughter and say, like, listen, I know that the assumption is going to be that we want to meet because you're getting engaged. I just see that you're really invested in this relationship, and I would love to start building a relationship with this person too, since things are going in a positive direction. Now, not by the third date, right? But you're talking...
The way.
There's... When you add numbers to these things, they always end up going wrong. I'm not going to give any numbers to the number of dates for this, the number of dates for that, the number of dates for this. When you feel that, when you hear from your child that they're inching in the direction that they really think that this is the one, more so than anybody else, it's okay to say, hey, when do you think I could get to meet this person? But when that happens, and I'll respond to your questions, I'm pointing to you, but this is to everybody. The environment that you set, so I was introduced as an experimental Jewish education? It's not, it's experiential Jewish education, which is not the same thing. The environment in which you set when you bring your child into the house. And I remember, I don't think family Jews say this, when I brought my wife home to meet my one of my two parents' families. Yay for the modern world. So I walked in. I have never seen the table set like that on a weekday. I have never seen all of my siblings at the table at one time on a weekday. I have never seen Shabbos food served on a weekday. Don't tell your child it'll be graded informal and then make a Shabbos meal. Because then I can't prepare the person I'm dating for what we're about to experience. She's going to get thrown. I'm going to get... Meaning, if you go in, I would say, listen, I just want to get to know this person a little bit. I want to get to know him or her a little bit. If you're at that point, you have to be engaged. I want to do it before you get engaged. Let's know them. And if you're going to tell them it's going to be informal, make it informal. And that's okay. And if things get more serious, so then get it more serious. But also, you're not dating them. What you should be watching is, how are they interacting? And you come back to those two things. You can probably presume that there's mutual attraction or ask the child directly. You want to see, do they have mutual respect? Yes.
One more thing related to mutual respect.
Yes.
Which I've experienced through life experience. When they do get married, or even in the dating scene, when either one doesn't respect the other family's menhagim or customs, and they will make fun of, because I've experienced that. In other words, they'll say, I mean, I'm just using these two as, you know, some people don't like Lubavitch, some people don't like Sofner, some people don't like Misnagdim, some people don't like, you know, what's the Hasidish. So if the families are so diverse and the respect is not there, or Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, my opinion is, if there's no respect for the differences in culture, how could there be respect once those families get married?
I agree 100%, but I would say two things. One is, if the first time that your child's intended is finding out that your family are Misnagdim or Hasidim or Lubavitch, is when they walk into your home, they don't have an open dialogue. So that's a problem. If they do know that before walking in, and they walk in and make fun of the house they just walked into when they're walking to their potential future in-law's house, then that isn't a mutual respect, and that's something you do want to talk about with your child. But on the flip side, because I'm talking to parents and not to children, if you know that she's bringing home a chassid and you're a misnagid, don't walk in ready for a fight. Walk in with an open mind and an open heart. And when you do walk in with an open mind and an open heart, know that you're not there yet and give it another extra hour. Because it's making you crazy inside. So it goes both ways. I'm just saying it goes both ways.
I always believe this, and forgive me anybody who doesn't think so, I believe that mothers always know best. Forgive me for saying that. Because of life experience, there would be a lot of, not that they know their child, but mothers have, like you said, Goet Hanola. They know from previous experience, and also in the Torah, mother and daughter-in-law relationships, from the beginning, there's always friction, because that's the nature of the world. Except if you very, it would, in other words, the mother, if she really interceded, would save a lot of grief for the children in the future, because mothers know best, because they can sort of grow
at
Tanola.
So,
I don't get the question.
So I'll respond to that. I'm going to say we can pick this up afterward because we'll move on to the next point. This I will relate a specific story. This is the first actual specific story of an individual who grew up very frum, was entirely going off the derech. The parents knew some things but not others. The child had cut off from all other rabbinic figures because they had told him that he's basically going to go to hell if he keeps doing what he's doing. So he said, great, you go to hell. And instead, he kept on talking to me because I didn't encourage his behavior, but I accepted him for who he was. And the parents found out that I was accepting to maintain the relationship as this person went on a downward spiral. And the mother called me up. And for an hour, basically, the bottom line was, how dare you? Because mother knows best. At which point I was like, listen, I'm young, I'm new, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. And I took a step back and I cut off the relationship with the child. A year later, he was in drug rehab. So I'm not saying that that's always true. And yes, mothers have tremendous insight. But when a parent, not you anymore, when a parent walks into these situations, when a parent walks into these situations, go in with an open mind. That despite the life experience and despite the fact that you changed their diapers, which is something great to throw in their faces, they're like, their mental capacity is still at the age when you were changing their diapers. Yes, you changed their diapers, but they have grown up and gone off, and they are in Israel, and they are in college, and they are in grad school, they are wherever it is that they are. You don't necessarily know them as well as you think you do, and that's not a bad thing. That's why they're ready to move on and start their own home. So yes, you know right about a lot of things. But if this is the person that they're going to marry, very likely, work on yourself as best as possible to come in with an open mind and know that the person will never, ever, ever meet your expectations. Ever. Because you're all great parents, and you love your child. And they are the most special person that God ever placed in this earth. And your child is dating somebody who is not God's gift to man because she isn't him. But if he's attracted to her, and he respects her, and this is what you want to look at but not grill her on, because she'll know if you're grilling her, and she has respect for him, then open up to the fact that this may be your daughter-in-law, your son-in-law, and don't alienate them before it's too late.
Respect the family that that person comes from.
100%, but that's the same thing. But then that's not mutual respect. I'm agreeing with you. Then that is not mutual respect.
In other words, before you want, someone wants to allow their child to go into a relationship, they should know that the person that they're going to have a life with is a respectful person to every... I'm not talking about really crazy people, like people that are...
Whatever that may be, yes.
I mean, I don't want to mention specific sex. But they have to respect... I mean, I was in a situation where I knew someone whose child was a balas chuba or bal chuba, and they really didn't like it because they were used to being non-religious at all. And they started... I was at a Hanukkah party somewhere many, many years ago, and this woman was very much against that. Her daughter, she said, it's a cult, and she was in Lubavitch, and she started cursing the Rebbe. You could say, I don't agree... I could agree not... I could...
Then you've identified legitimate lack of mutual respect, and that's, and I think that we agree. And I think that we agree.
You know, you don't have to agree with someone. Even in a marriage, you could say to someone, or a good friend, you could say, all I want is your support. You might not agree. This is my feeling. I mean, I'm just being, you could agree to disagree, but in a respectful way.
100%. I'm going to take it forward to the next point, because we're moving along. To the next point. Despite the fact that they are not the most amazing person on the face of the planet who you hoped your child would marry, but you've realized that it's the right person for your child. Now they're engaged. Couple of points about engagement. Planning the wedding. Lo aleinu. Planning the wedding. Don't draw your children into financial considerations about the wedding. Now, this is a point that goes both ways that I'm about to say, and when I have chassanim, who I give chassan classes to, my wife has college, she has college classes to, we emphasize this point from day one. Now, I'm going to emphasize it on the opposite side. Don't take this to the extreme, because I don't want to hurt the kids. But it should be true on both sides. This is not their wedding. The wedding that you are planning is your wedding. You need to understand that, and they need to understand that. What they need to understand is that it's your wedding. What you need to understand is that it's your wedding for them. And the truth lies somewhere in between. But the expectations should be aligned with that phrase in mind. It's your wedding. If you are paying for it, and you are putting it together, and you are taking care of everything, and this is you setting off your child, it is your wedding. And they need to understand that. But, that being said, why would you want to plan a wedding that alienates your child? Why would you want to plan a wedding where your child is like, this is... I dreamed of this wedding for ages, and this is not the wedding that I want. And so it's really important to find a level of compromise somewhere in between. What I usually tell someone, because I assume that parents tend to get pretty tight about this one, is I say, and I would encourage you perhaps to have this conversation with your child, should I not be their classroom teacher and my wife not be their college teacher? Is I sit with them and I say, listen, think about it really critically. You want this wedding to be exactly what you want, that's great. But pick two or three things that to you will make the wedding for you. And talk to your parents respectfully. That already causes problems. Talk to your parents respectfully and say, listen, these are the two or three things that really, really mean something to me that I really want to be part of this wedding. Everything else, I'll go along. If you want to include me, great. If not, not. It's your wedding. It's still for me, but it's your wedding. But these two or three things I really, really want that will make my wedding my wedding. I'll share with you. I don't think there's any reason I don't mind sharing with you what were my two things. I mean, like, this is, every child's going to be different. To me, all I care about was the dancing. I said, I want to pick the band. And I want to go a little bit more all out with the band. And I apologize, it's going to cost a little bit more, but I want to pick the band. Because the dancing's what's important to me. And the second thing is, my Rebbe is a calligrapher. I want him to make the ketubah. And it's going to be a little bit more expensive, but I want him to make the ketubah. Everything else, up to you. And some things they included me with it, and they included me in, and some things they didn't. And there was one battle that I thought that I shouldn't have, because my parents fully disagreed and I didn't respect that it was their wedding for me. And they won. And they were right. In retrospect, right? I'll admit it, they were 100% right. I'm not going to say what that is, because don't want to give you cannon fodder. And they were 100% right. But, like, where's that balance of making sure that there are elements within the wedding that are really reflect your child because it is for them? But help them understand that it really is your wedding as well, that it's the wedding that you're planning. Now, that goes in terms of, I cut out a lot of things about how you should deal with your machatanim. Because I don't have machatanim. My children are not of marriageable age yet. So I've never dealt with my child's parents. So I'm not going to go there because I don't have the experience of talking about that. What I can say is I know what trickles down to the children, what trickles down to your children, to my students, which is when the wedding planning becomes all-consuming for you, which is normal but unhealthy, when it becomes all-consuming for you, that's okay. Do not talk to your children about fights that you're having, hopefully there won't be, but the fights that you're inevitably going to have with her or his parents about the finances of the wedding, about the planning of the wedding. Let them continue to develop their relationship, because if you want them to respect that it's your wedding, then it's your wedding. And it shouldn't go to them, and it certainly should not become a source of tension in their relationship. They are not pawns to be used between you and the other parents. And that's really hard to do, because you feel like, well, if he hadn't picked her or she hadn't picked him, I wouldn't have been dealing with these people. And I would have to, yeah, okay, that's true. But you know what? That's life. This is what's happened. And you're not servicing anyone by drawing the children into that. So I would recommend doing your best to keep that from turning bad in the first place, but I don't know what that's like, so all I can say is good luck to you. But I can say not to draw your children into it, because it can be really damaging to the marriage. Okay. Last couple of points. We talked about this kind of mythical arc of 6 month dating and 6 month engaged in the marriage after a year. You'd be surprised how many times parents are, nope, 6 months. 6 months or more. But definitely.
My daughter was 1 month.
6 months or more. And some of you, when you just heard 1 month, were like, heck no. It's both. But let me give you it from the, all I can do is share with you the student's perspective. And for you too. It doesn't matter to me entirely how long it takes to get to the wedding. Though, if it's the right one, what are you waiting for? I'm not totally clear on that. I've never gotten a clear answer from a student where their parents are desperate to push off the wedding as long as possible, why it is that they are desperate to push off the wedding. If you don't think that they should be together, that's a separate conversation. But pushing off the wedding in the hopes that they'll break up is also not a healthy way of conveying that point. So I don't know why we're pushing off the wedding, but whatever that date is that you've settled on, that you know is going to be the wedding, don't push them to get engaged. They should get engaged as close as humanly possible to the date of the wedding. That being said, I don't care. You can pick the flowers. You can pick the hall. You can pick the Masada Kedushin. You can plan whatever you want while they're still dating. And you'll tell me, but we're planning the wedding. What's the difference? And I will tell you, I don't know, but it is different. And every single student that I've worked with, it doesn't matter. Something incredible happens when the ring goes on the fingers. And first of all, for you, the stress about the wedding between the parents increases exponentially. And I know that because it often trickles down to the kids. So save yourself from that. Have a more pleasant ride to the wedding and have a shorter engagement period. Also for your child, the tensions between the two of them also get heightened. And the two are linked to each other, but the tensions also get heightened. And it becomes much more difficult for them. And it's a lot more stress. The worst period from, and for those of you whose kids are dating, you think dating is the worst? It's not. Engagement is the worst period in the dating process. I have not yet seen an exception to that in any student I know has gotten engaged. 1 second. So as much as you can slim down the engagement, the better. Also, and this is specifically for parents whose children are Shomer Negiya. It is also inexplicable, but the physical connectivity and the draw for physical contact between a couple during engagement, for no logical reason, I have no explanation for it, increases exponentially when they get engaged. You'll tell me, same amount of time? I'll tell you, yeah, same amount of time, it doesn't matter. Once they get engaged, it becomes that much more difficult. Now, I'll tell you why this is a problem. One, if you're inclined to not have your kids cross that line before they get married, that's a good reason in and of itself. But let's say you don't care, and that's fine. Let's say you're like, I don't care. I'm not sure yet. What, they want to be sure yet, it's up to them. I'll tell you why you want to care about this point. Because if your child has been Shomer Negiya for years, and then you give them a 6 month engagement, and every day it gets increasingly more difficult for them not to touch, or touch further than they touched before, and then because they can't hold back anymore, 4 months later, 5 months later, 8 months later, because you wanted the wedding to be in the summer and it happens to be 12 months from now, and they end up crossing that line, here's what could happen, doesn't always happen, here's what could happen. They crossed a line that they swore that they would never cross. And they cross the line with that person. And all that they see, day in and day out, whenever they look at that person, that day forward is, what in their mind is the biggest sin of their life. And there are times where that can cause a couple to break up. It definitely causes stress in the relationship. But But there are times when there have been instances where it has broken up engagements. And what the long engagement is doing is adding that serious stretch, which could lead to a situation that's undesirable. And you can say, okay, so I have to get through it, that's life, yes and no, but also that they may not recover from. And it will stay with them for a long time. And there's nothing more painful than having to sit in front of a chassan, bawling his eyes out at me, telling me what he's done, and telling him, you get kapara under your chuppah, put it out of your mind, start fresh, and he just can't stop crying. It's a very serious issue if your child is from India, or if there are certain borders they haven't crossed, perhaps even more so because once they've already engaged in physical contact, it's much more easy for it to snowball. That giving them a long engagement increases that. And people don't talk about this publicly. I don't know if this thing's going up anywhere. I don't know if I'm going to get flack for it. All I can tell you is what I experience. All I can tell you is what I hear from the kids. All I can tell you is what I hear from my students. And this is a consistent problem. And also, if you want to keep your kid religious, the first thing that goes when they start getting depressed about that is they stop going to minyan, and they stop learning, and they stop doing their chesed. They immediately stop because they don't want to look God in the face either. So for all these reasons and more, think very critically about pushing your child to get engaged immediately because you want to start the wedding planning. You heard it from me. You can blame me. I said, whatever I'm worth. Plan the whole wedding. But let them hold off the engagement. And you'll tell me it doesn't make a difference. I will tell you. You will know the difference once they get engaged and you can't go back. I'm going to take a quick comment and then I want to finish because I'm super over time.
One
yeah.
quick question. I'm really unclear.
Yeah.
At the beginning of your lecture, you had said, what are the kids' expectations? If I'm going to support them through college, I'm going to give them. So what are their expectations about the wedding? Because my experience has been, and I this happened with a friend of mine, whatever, and they couldn't afford to pay for certain things in the wedding. And the Kala was very distressed because there was no money on her side. Like, there's certain rules, sometimes there are flops, you know, for the male. Wait, let me just, I'm going to be brief. But a lot of it is financial. So the expectations at the beginning of your shiur was that they might expect the parents to pay for the wedding. But a lot of it boils down to financial things. In other words, this college said, let's put the wedding off, or let's cancel the wedding because my parents can't give the money.
I think that you need to be upfront with your child when they're toward engagement about what it is that you will and won't put into the wedding.
And even in more orthodox circles, if the boy is learning, will you give full support? Will you give half?
That was what we talked about all the way at the beginning. That's part of that conversation. But here I do think that you should be upfront with them from the beginning about what your wedding that you are going to make for them. And that if they're going to be issues with that, this is what you can do, this is what you're planning to do. You will absolutely honor that, and that's what you want to do for them. And that's part, to me, that's part of that conversation. But again, we can swing back and talk it out more if you'd like afterward. Last couple of bullet points from just preparing your child while they're engaged. These things are a little bit less tense. One point I missed from before, very important. And I'm sorry this is coming in now because this is when it usually gets brought up, and it shouldn't be brought up. It should be brought up way before, and I missed a bullet point. Genetic testing. Genetic testing. I'm not saying what type of genetic testing. You said a type of genetic testing. I didn't say a type of genetic testing. You could do whatever type of genetic testing you want.
That's in high school, right?
For some kids, yes. For some kids, no. I deal with Baalei Tshuva. Some high schools don't. Some colleges do. Some colleges don't. There's a philosophical debate. Great. You know what I don't care about? Anything but the kid. So the philosophical debate is wonderful. But what I would say is, one, make sure that when they start dating, that they get tested either by something like Dor Yesharim or something like open testing. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, educate yourself about genetic testing so you know what you're talking about and you know how to guide your child. And make sure that your child understands that it's something that they must do before they start dating, is that they must at least have a model for genetic testing. And number two, encourage them to follow through on genetic testing earlier on in the dating process. I will give who asked me for a number last time? I will give a number to this one.
Good.
I will say, once you're already getting around 5-6 dates, and you'd be like, wow, that's so early. Yeah, you're past 2-3. This is not it. You know, you're not just doing genetic testing with every single person who's walking through the door.
No.
You made it past number 2. Date 3, date 4, date 5. Once it's already going somewhere, the call is probably going to freak out. The chassan is probably going to freak out the other person because, like, that's what you do right before you get engaged.
No, don't do that before you're
engaged. I know. I'm telling you what I get. And that is absolutely not what it is, because you don't want the relationship to get to a point where, and I get this all the time, I'm not doing genetic testing, Rabbi. Why? Because I know that this is my soulmate and I'm marrying them anyway. So what's the point? Well, the point was to do it 3 months ago, so we didn't get here. That's the why you do genetic testing. That's what they all say, do it early. So you need to educate yourselves about genetic testing. Some do it even before they go out. I'm a fan of that also, but it's hard. I'm not trying to create an entire culture shift overnight. I agree with you. But at least, I'd love to pull it back from the day before the engagement, which is what I usually experience with my students, to at least very, very early on in the dating, if not before the date itself.
Well, if you have to reassure me, just make that phone call, then you know for sure if you're compatible or not.
It's incredibly simple. I'm not arguing the simplicity of the system.
That go with divorced women.
I'm talking about genetic testing. One second.
In today's world, none of it is similar, because there are Kohanim that they know they can't be with divorced women.
Then that's not being forthcoming. That's not being forthcoming with the Shadchan. I'm talking about genetic testing, which the Shadchan won't know. This is something which they need to do. So educate yourselves about it and educate your kids about it. Moving forward. Okay. These are actually my last two bullet points, for real. It's good to just know that we're ending. When your child gets engaged, there is something called chasen classes and kala classes. It's not entirely clear to me what was going on when you all were getting married. I just know it was different. But I'm not 100% clear on what exactly you did or did not have available to you at the time. So I want to tell you what chasen and kala classes are, bizman hazeh, in the time that we live in right now. They are the most, one of two, we'll talk about the other one of the two most critical investments that you're going to make in your child's future while they're engaged. A chasen and kala class does three things. One is, it teaches them hilchot nida, which is how they're going to keep a marriage of family purity. Two is, it teaches them the practicals and the laws of intimacy, which, if you are going to let them only go based on what they've heard from their friends, is probably a bad idea. And if it's from their married friends, it's probably a worse idea. And I have to undo a lot of that damage sometimes. And the third thing is we, if those of us who believe in this, those of us who are good at it, and there are a bunch, not as many as there should be, also lace it with shalom bayis. You are investing in the ritual, halachic, spiritual, and psychological well-being of your child's marriage with chasen classes. If you're not going to negotiate to the same extent over the flowers, don't negotiate with the chasen kala teacher about how much you're willing to give them in order to do the chasen kala classes. Don't say to your child, you want me to pay for this too? What about all the other expenses? My response would be, and this is something you want to invest in. And it's comparative to the flowers, by the way. It's night and day. It's not that expensive in comparison to the flowers. This is your opportunity to make sure that your child understands to pick their chasen or kala teacher carefully, to do a little bit of research. Some of them don't, and they end up with bad chasen kala teachers.
How do you evaluate that?
I can't, that I have a, I'm no Gabba Dabar, so I can talk to you personally. I can't say. But do your research. Don't do your research in a way that's overbearing, but, you know, help encourage them to make sure that they do their research and find people who will teach them Hilchot Nida correctly, comprehensively, that will teach them intimacy correctly and comprehensively, and, meaning both in terms of Halachot and also the practicals, because we're the people who come back when the child has an unconsummated marriage a few months later. Baruch Hashem, we haven't seen that. What I will tell you is that there was a student who came back to me 10 months afterward, and we talked about it extensively, and I have such respect for him. Such respect for him. Amazing, amazing guy. He came back to me, and he followed through. I told him, if anything comes up, you talk to me. We had a whole longer discussion that I'm not going to share with you. But he said, it was classic, though. It was, you know, like doorknob therapy. It was like an hour before Shabbos. Hey, Rabbi, just wanted to let you know it's been X number of months, and my wife still doesn't find intimacy enjoyable. Can you refer me to someone? Thanks. Shabbat shalom. It's like an amazing text message. Which is an amazing text message. But, you know, kudos for him for coming to me like I told him to. But we're the person that they're going to come to, because they're probably not going to talk to anybody a lot of the times. So it's also the practicals, and it's also, meaning, this was also a couple, by the way, coming back to, there's also a couple where under the chuppah, the mother looked at me after the chuppah, and I said, it's so great to me that I'm so glad I was able to help them, and said, I really hope this marriage works. That was their response to me after the chuppah. These things are very hard. We're the people who are going to help guide them now and in the future, help them understand they need to pick that person carefully, and invest in it. It's worth investing in. Here's the last thing that I will recommend investing in, and then I'm going to conclude, and anybody can sit around and talk to me if they want. I'm not going to do that because that's up to the Masada Kedushin. And as far as I know, I'm not yet, except for one, oh, that's not true. With one exception, I'm not anybody's Masada Kedushin for their kids. So that's up to the Masada Kedushin. Pre-marriage counseling. Pre-marriage counseling. Thank God people are nodding. Okay, pre-marriage counseling. This is the hardest sell for me to the Chassan and Kala that I'm working with. Because they think I'm saying your marriage is going to fail. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, you are about to get married, and if you're investing in all of these other things, you want to go to somebody who's a professional in, wouldn't you know it, marriage. Now, they say to me, but what if they tell me that it's not right? What if they tell me that this is going to end in disaster? My response is, first of all, have more confidence in your own marriage. And second of all, if they do tell you it's going to be a disaster, wouldn't you rather know that now than later? Number one. Number two, that's not what's going to happen unless your marriage is a disaster, which then it's a good thing. But I'm going to calm you down. It's going to be fine. Here's what the pre-marriage counselor is going to do. Because they're a professional in this area, they're going to sit with you, and they're going to find a couple of rotten roots that will not invalidate the marriage by any stretch of the imagination. But by you sitting with them now while you're engaged and pulling that root out of the ground before it even begins to grow, you are saving yourself endless hours of tzaras during marriage and endless issues of shalom bayis by identifying the issue, uprooting it, or naming it and knowing what it is and knowing how to navigate it from a professional. This is the one piece of advice that the majority of my Hassan and Kalas, my wife's Kalas, do not take. And they usually quote a combination of, I don't need it and I'm uncomfortable, and my parents won't pay for it. Now, this is one of those things where I think even if the parents won't pay for it, honestly, they should be paying for it. But since I'm talking to you, you should be paying for it. It is one of the greatest investments that you will make in your child's life because think of the hours on the phone you're going to spend with them when their marriage is in difficulty that you are undercutting right now by letting them deal with it in advance. I see a couple of hands. I don't even know what time we're supposed to end. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. Please, please, please feel free to send me any feedback. Again, this is all advice from my experience. It's not based on sources.